Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. New Hope is a church that puts people first. You can listen to our sermons and podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any popular podcasting platforms. You can now join us for live streaming on YouTube, Vimeo, or Facebook. Our worship services start at 10:45 on Sundays. This week, Pastor Russ brings us a sermon on his birthday called Lessons Learned After 65 Years.
You're hearing this sermon on Sunday, July the 5th, which happens to be my birthday. More than that, it happens to be my 65th birthday. And there is something about that number that seems pretty big. But whether it's big or small, there is a question I have learned to entertain, particularly around birthdays. It was asked by me years ago, I think around my 40th. And it was simply, so, what have you been learning? What a good question. I've been thinking about that as I came to this date. I've been thinking, so what have I learned about life, about myself, about God? What is it that I would preach on a day of my 65th birthday? And for some reason, this odd little passage that I'm going to read here in just a minute keeps coming up. And it was like, well, that's an odd passage. There's got to be something else. And I would think about something else. But no, this one just kept coming back in. So I have learned over the years, one of the lessons I've learned is to pay attention to those nudges. This is a very strange story. It's an odd story, and like it is unlike just about any other story that we find in the Bible. It's out of Acts 27, and it's about Paul, and it's towards the end of Paul's life. It is on his way to be tried in Rome. He's looking for an audience with Caesar, to be tried by Caesar. And it begins at the beginning of chapter 27. I'm only going to read excerpts, but around verse 2 it says, "We put to sea." Now, when you and I put to sea, we are usually doing it with anticipation. We are doing it maybe because it's a cruise or there's a trip. We kind of know what we want to do. We've got guides. We've got backup. We're ready to go. That's just very 21st century thinking. First century thinking is much more what we find in the Bible, that when we put to sea, it often means that we're about to take a journey that we did not choose. And often we would not choose if we didn't have to. The sea in the Bible is the source of chaos. It is the source of storms. It is the source of things that come out of terror and of fear. When in Revelation it talks about the final scene and it says, and the sea was no more, it's not because it doesn't like beach weather. It's because it is saying symbolically the place of chaos and where we're out of control, the place of fear will no longer be. But that's exactly where they're going. And it proves to be true. It proves to be all of those things in this journey. In this voyage, Paul gets on this boat with some friends and he's a prisoner. And he's taking off on this. And Acts 27 is a long story. It's detailed. And some who's ever telling this story knows an awful lot about nautical information and what it means to be on the sea. You can read it more yourself if you'd like for all the details. I'm just going to read a couple excerpts of it around this, because in the midst of this voyage, things go very wrong and one of those great storms comes up, and it's throughout the journey, and it goes something like this. It says, "We were being pounded by the storm so violently that on the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. And on the third day, with their own hands, they threw the ship's tackle overboard. And when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest raged, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned." All hope of us being saved was at last abandoned. There's something to that story for our time, isn't it? There's a lot of people who feel very buffeted right now. They feel very much out of control. And whether it's on land or sea, that there are things going on. And the stories I hear within our own congregation of the sorrow and the grief and the things that are out of control and the chaos. It is easy to get to this place of it's done. There's completely out of control. And so maybe this story is a good story for this day and this season after all. It goes on. It's Paul talking finally to the crew and trying to encourage them. And he can't help at one point get a dig in and said, listen, if you'd if you just listened to me earlier, we wouldn't be in this mess, and you'll have to read the whole thing to catch what he's talking about there. But he said, but nonetheless, let me tell you, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay because God told me it's going to be okay. An angel came to me and told me, and it's going to be okay. And several times he says, now listen, take courage. Take courage, you guys. It's going to be okay. It's not going to be easy. And in fact, the whole thing, the whole ship is going to be wrecked, but we're going to be fine. And then it goes on to this part. It goes on to this particular passage. Just before daybreak, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, today is the 14th day that you have been in suspense and remaining without food, having eaten nothing. And therefore, I urge you all to take some food, for it will help you survive. For none of you will lose a hair from your heads. And after he said this, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. And then all of them were encouraged and took food for themselves. We were all 276 persons on the ship. And after they satisfied their hunger, they lightened the ship by throwing the wheat into the sea. There's a lot of stories in the Bible where there are outward circumstances and a prayer is made and then the storm ends or the enemy is vanquished or whatever it is outside, the pestilence is diminished. There's a lot of stories like this. Here's what I find odd about this story, and maybe it's why it's so intriguing. When Jesus is with his disciples, and they're in a boat, and there's a storm, and they, like the sailors in our story, begin to lose it, and Jesus says, peace, and then the waters calm, the storm goes away. In this case, the storms didn't go away. God didn't calm the storm outside. But what God did do was calm the storm, at least of one person, inside. Here's what I find so compelling about this. There's this character, Paul, in the midst of this chaotic scene. And of all the people, Paul is the one. Paul is a prisoner on board, and yet you get the sense that no one is more free right now than Paul. Everyone is afraid, and yet, and Paul has more to fear than anyone. Even if his journey is successful, it is likely he'll end in death. And yet, he is the one telling everyone else to take heart. Have courage. There is this sense at the end when it's everyone for themselves, as it is often in times like this. And here's this person whose first concern is for other people's courage, other people's welfare. How are you doing? You ought to eat something. It'll really help you. Here's this person who just seems to be at odds with everything else that's going on. And when I look at that, I say, now that is a God thing. The real miracle is not so much that the weather changed. Sometimes weather just changes. That can be a miracle. But what we have here is not just an outward change, but there is a change, a transformation of the heart. And that impresses me. Over the years, what I have learned is it's impressive. It's impressive with victories and goals accomplished and numbers and programs and all the things that go your way when you plan and you execute a plan. That's impressive. I am even more impressed over these years with people when everything goes wrong, when there's faults, there's failings, things that they have no control of that enter their life. And yet it's there that we find someone, there's a core of resilience, of generosity, of comfort, compassion. Sometimes the outer circumstances just change by accident. But when I see someone's life who's been changed like that, I know that is no accident. That doesn't happen just by accident. That is truly what I would call a God thing. All these people on the boat are praying to God in whatever way they pray and to whoever God they think they have. And God does show up. But God shows up in this story in a way that looks an awful lot like Paul. And so that what they're really praying for, they didn't know it, but what they're really praying is for Paul to show up. It reminds me of the great prayer, Mother Teresa, when she talks about prayer, and she said, you know, I used to believe that prayer changes things. Now I know that prayer changes us and we change things. That's what's going on in this story. And what I have learned is that's the real God thing. That's the real place. That's the place to pay attention. That's where I get excited, is when people on the inside begin to change, because changed people change things. They change environments, they change structures, they change life around them. In a minute, I'm going to talk a little bit more about how that happens, but I want to let that just sit in for a minute. A couple months ago, somebody asked me what my favorite hymn was. What was the hymn that I go to in times of trouble? What keeps me afloat, if you will, in this story? And without even thinking about it, it just popped in my head. It's a favorite of mine. Be still, my soul. Be still, my soul. The Lord is on your side. Bear patiently the cross of grief or pain. Leave to your God to order and provide. In every change, He faithful will remain. Nick picked out a beautiful version of that, and I want you to listen to that, and maybe just let the music sink into you. Maybe let the words kind of just marinate your soul a little bit, thinking about maybe what kind of things have you learned, or maybe who are the people who have showed up in your life representing God? Who are the people who came and bore witness to the God who is your best, your heavenly friend? And if while you're thinking about that, you might also think about this. So who's waiting for you to show up? Who's waiting for you to step forward and be that person? Christ has no body now but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the hands through which he blesses this world. Teresa of Avila said that. And I believe it. This is what happens when God takes hold and transforms a heart. This is what happens when the true us shows up. This is what it looks like. God in us, us in God. This is what changes the world. And here's what I've learned. This doesn't happen by accident. This doesn't happen by accident. Faith is a life. It takes time. It takes energy. Faith is something that needs to be nurtured, and it's not by accident. But there are things that we can do, and there are things we need to know. One of the phrases that has been coming back to me over the last several months has been just repeating, and simply this: we exist in time, but we belong to eternity. We exist in time. We belong right here. We exist in this time and space, but we belong in eternity. And we belong to eternity. And when we keep those two things, that becomes part of what the engine of change for us. The more that I am present in right here, the more I rely upon my connection and that I belong to eternity. The more that I nurture that connection to eternity, the more I am able to be present and courageous and resilient and compassionate and generous. I get to be the person God is creating me to be. I get to be God's person here and now. Pierre Chardin gets to this in ways that I think are just beautiful. He said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. That's what I used to think of that. We humans are having a spiritual experience, and that's what we're here for. He flips it around and says, no, we are spiritual beings have a human experience. Ah, that changes everything. That changes the way I live my life. That changes the way I am human. That changes the way I am in here in time and space. It means that I get to be a different person right here, right now, because of what God is doing. This is a God thing. And it means that indeed faith is a life. That kind of life doesn't happen overnight. That kind of life isn't. This is not a quick fix kind of faith. That means everything I am doing is part of that learning experience. When I say that faith is a life, what I'm saying is it's much less microwave and much more crock pot when it comes to developing my soul. It takes time. It takes intentionality. It means that we intentionally nurture both parts. When I talk about here of what are the things that nurture your soul, what are the things that nurture you, that connect you to the sacred, what are the things that draw your soul and open you up and do those things, I said, 5 times a week, make sure you do those things. This isn't just busy work, this is soul work. This is the kind of thing that grows us so that we get to be the kind of people God created us to be, the kind of people that our world needs right now. There are habits that help us do that. And there's personal habits, the 5 things a week or every day, and the prayer, the reading, the things that we do to open up our soul to God. And then there are some corporate things that we do too. Worship is one of those things. And in a few minutes, if you're part of our online, in real time audience this morning, our congregation, we're going to extend worship over to Zoom for a time of communion. That's one way that we do both, is in real time and space, talk about and emphasize our connection to eternity. But in all these things, I guess, what have I learned? I've learned this life, this faith is a God thing. This, because this is God's thing. So here's the words I want to leave you with today. Here's the words I want to leave you with. And once again, they're from Desjardins, as he's talking about that work of the soul and what part belongs to God and what part belongs to us. And I'm going to let this be our charge as well today. Above all, he says, trust in the slow work of God. We are quite naturally impatient in everything to reach the end without delay. We should like to skip the intermediate stages. We are impatient of being on the way to something unknown, something new. And yet it is the law of all progress that it is made by passing through some stage of instability, that it may take a very long time. And so I think it is with you. Your ideas mature gradually. Let them grow. Let them shape themselves without undue haste. Don't try to force them on as though you could be today what time, that is to say grace and circumstances, acting on your own goodwill, will make of you tomorrow. Only God could say what this new spirit gradually forming within you will be. Give our Lord the benefit of believing that his hand is leading you, and accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete. On this day, as we go out into this world for what God is doing, for what God has yet to do, for what God is creating in us and through us, the charge, of course, then is to go and love, because that's how we open ourselves to God. Love God with everything you've got. Love your neighbor as yourself. And as you go, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace. In believing, may you abound with hope through the power of the Holy Spirit now and forever. Amen. As you go out this day, friends, go in the peace of Christ and make sure that you spread it. Text it, tell it, tell someone, phone someone, in whatever way. May the peace of Christ be with you. Go in peace.
Thank you for listening to Voices of Hope. If you have enjoyed our podcast, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. And now, church, may you go and love your neighbor as yourself, and love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Go in peace.